Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those who are interested in the activities students are involved with during non-school hours. The Making After School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a division of Harris County Department of Education. And I'm your host, Mike Wilson. Since the COVID-19 outbreak occurred, the way we educate our children has changed drastically. Initially, schools shut down and students were taught remotely. Now that summer's here, many kids are taking a break from their learning. However, the startup of the 2021 school year is fast approaching. Yet many people are wondering, what will this new school year look like? This is particularly true for families with students in special education. To speak on this topic is my guest, Ms. Sharia Hill. Ms. Hill is a certified special education instructor and the host of the podcast, Sped Street. Sharia, how are you doing today? How are you and your family holding up?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for asking. Everyone's doing well, I think. Still going a little bit stir crazy, but safe, safe. So yeah. That's all we can ask for.
Yeah, exactly. Well, can you give us a little information about your professional background?
Absolutely. I started off my education at Howard University, where I got my BA in psychology. And so after that happened, I kind of thought I knew what I wanted to do, really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I went overseas and I taught English for a bit in Spain. And that's when my first experience with teaching came about, and primarily teaching impoverished children. So I got a lot of insight through that experience. Then I moved back to America and became a registered behavior therapist for persons with autism, and absolutely loved it. Fell in love with that craft, and that led me to get my teaching certification and become a special education teacher, which, of course, I loved even more. And then I couldn't get enough, so I went to University of North Texas and I got my master's in special education, and I concentrated in autism. So I'm currently an early childhood special education teacher in Cy Fair District, and I love what I do.
Oh, great. A little trivia on my background, actually. I'm a SPED certified teacher as well. Oh. And I taught special education for a number of years, as well as after school programs. And my career has always been sort of a combination of the both. So I'm really interested in this particular topic, as well as excited to have you as a guest. So you host the podcast SPED Street. What inspired mm-hmm. you to start your podcast?
That's a really loaded question, but for the sake of time, I'll try to minimize. So let's see. So there was the biggest thing that stuck out to me was that there was no common space that had free information for parents, right? There was no place that you could go that you didn't have to pay somebody to get an opinion or to find out certain key items. I wasn't seeing support groups or help groups. I just wasn't seeing it. And because of the children I teach children who very first are diagnosed or very first labeled. So I'm a child's first introduction into the education system. So that means I'm the parent's first introduction into the education system. And they were just always had so many questions. They were terrified. They were nervous. And I just felt like there could be a resource for them to feel more comfortable. And so I wanted persons who didn't have access and who were confused about information to feel successful. And to do that, they need the resources. So I created Sped Street for that. And then also, too, I think there was just a lot of old school views of special needs. Parents are probably between the ages of 25 and 35. Back when we were in school, special education looked a lot different. And so right. they were scared. They were like, I don't know what this means. I don't know what's going on. And so I didn't want them thinking that just because their child is differently abled and about to enter into an atypical program, that it meant that they were going to be coloring sheets all day, you know? And so that's kind of how Sped Street was birthed.
Good. I mean, I think it's a very important resource. When I first got into special education, I actually was working with students who were severely low. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the thing with special education, which I discovered, it's such a vast category. And for our listeners who are not aware of special education services, can you briefly describe the different types of special education categories?
Yeah, sure. So you have, starting from the bottom, which is what I'm doing, which is early childhood special education. That's when your child, at the earliest, they're 3 years old, and you find out that there's something going on, whether it be speech impaired or NCEC, which means non-categorical. So that's kind of what we call children who may have autism, but we're not sure yet. So all those early things, Down syndrome, they'll come into that program. Then when they turn six, they proceed, if they are not ready to go into the general education classroom or an inclusion setting, they'll proceed to a life skills program, which is different than general education in that we're teaching you skills that you need to survive in life, just like it says. So then you'll go through that program all the way up until however old you are when you graduate. And then that's kind of how special education is broken up. You could be in special education for a number of reasons and never be in life skills and be in general education your whole time. For example, ADD, ADHD, speech impaired, SI, you might be in special education services because you're getting speech or because you're getting physical therapy, not because you have a cognitive disability. So it's varied and right. It's vast, but that's, if I could give it in a nutshell, that's how I would describe it.
Now, some people have negative stereotypes about special education. Mm-hmm. How do you reduce the anxiety that some parents may have when they hear that their child is eligible for SPED services?
So like I said, I'm working with children and parents who this is their first introduction to education. So the first thing that I do is, I always try to note that, you know, to find out in the beginning is a privilege, because you have the most time to figure it out. Okay. So I try to comfort their mind with that. Just because you find out doesn't mean that someone's saying that your child is never going to be successful, right? It just gives you more time to figure out how to help them be successful. The second thing I do is I try to give success stories. I have lots of success stories in my room of children who started and couldn't speak and were headbanging, and now they're leading their class in second grade, right? So I try to give them hope in that way, to let them know that it is possible and it does exist. And there's very rarely a child that enters into special education that doesn't leave better in some way, okay? It's very rarely you're going to regress. So I try to give them hope with that. And then I inform them of my philosophy, which is that their children are not wrong or a mistake, that they only learn different. And it's a lock and key. And if the kids are the lock, it's my job to find the key to help them reach their goals. And by the end of that, they're usually kind of calm, but I just always try to end with hope. I think hope is the thing that people leave out a lot when they speak to parents, and they don't realize the thousands of thoughts running through their minds. So I think if you can leave them with hope and not false hope, not anything like, oh, one day they're going to, you know, whatever, not like that. Just hope that it's going to be better, because it will be better, and giving right. them that resource to know that they're not alone.
Yeah, it sounds like you take a positive approach, which for a lot of families, that's what's needed. Mm-hmm. I actually was working with, they were high school, severely mentally challenged students. And we focused primarily on appropriate behavior and life skills. And what I soon came to realize is I wasn't the one with they weren't the one with the disability I was. And I had to learn how to reach them. And so for me, it was a very inspiring experience for me. Now, there's a little controversy regarding special education, because there's a disproportionate number of children of color tend to get referred to special education. Can you touch a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to try to put this as politically correct as possible. In special education, there are an extensive amount of children of color who are preferred. In fact, just for perspective, I've only had one Caucasian student my entire career as a teacher. Just one. Every single student I have had has been of color, whether that be Black, Hispanic. I've had some Asian children, but just for perspective. So I think that this is proof of the disparities that happen in our community, because in reality, there is no statistical significance that says that children of color have disabilities more than their Caucasian counterparts. It's mm-hmm. just that we don't get diagnosed as soon. It's just that we don't know as soon. So mm-hmm. sometimes the extent of the disability, I feel, stretches further than it would, a child who isn't of color, specifically because they knew earlier than we knew. How many times, and I can speak for the Black community, do you have an uncle that nobody talks about that's a little different, or a cousin that's just a little different? We never took him to get checked out, but, you know, he cool, just he a little different. We don't know what's going on with them. So we don't know how to help. We're just doing what we can. But I find that children who are not of color have the resources, their parents have the resources to not only find out soon, but to get them the extra extended help, to get them into full day ABA programs, to get them into those types of settings to the way they can excel. Right. And so I think that it's just proof of disparities in our personal community, because what's the reasons that would keep us from getting our child diagnosed early? First of all, the fear of the doctors. Right. There's no the insurance lack that exists. So some families just simply don't have the resources to take their child to get these simple things done. Transportation. You know, if it's already difficult for my child who does, say my child is on the spectrum and they scream every chance they get, it's already difficult for us to do things like go to the grocery store. You think I'm trying to take them on the bus to go to the doctor? I'm not trying to do that. So that's extra anxiety. There's food deserts, the access to clean water, all of those things. You know, when you do get a label, they tell you that what you eat and the way that you carry your lifestyle for your child matters. You know what I'm saying? So. Yeah. We are in areas where we can't access healthy food. A lot of places do not have clean water, can't afford a Brita filter. And then on top of that, parents need to work sometimes at odd hours. I have a student whose dad works overnight. His mom works overnight. Grandma takes care of him during the day. And it's like, so who's supposed to take him to the doctor? Right. Where does that happen? And so I think that the things that happen in our communities is what affects us being the higher proportion in special education services. Because while we're coming in at six, you know, you don't have to go to pre-K in Texas. I actually don't think you have to go to kindergarten in Texas. I think it starts first grade, but don't quote me. But when you start school at 5 or 6, these children who find out at 2.5 are ahead of the curve because they've been in school for almost 4 years. So when they start, they might not have that label no more. They might just be, you know, speech impaired. And our kids are coming in first time ever in a setting. And we're starting from the ground, from the bottom. But we don't have as much of that important time that their Caucasian counterparts had. And so I think you have to remember that even though some atypical diagnoses are from birth, some are developed. And the ones that are developed needs to be addressed early. And I think that's just the disproportion. Not that we have a higher proportion of children who are atypical.
Right. And I think that touches up a little bit on, you know, structural and societal inequality. So mm-hmm. that could be a whole different podcast episode in itself. and it's interesting, too, because, like I said, I was teaching severely students with multiple disabilities. And our class was primarily Anglo. But I think because many of those students had visible disabilities.
Right.
It was easy to see. You know, right. I think when we start just talking about cognitive disabilities, and if they don't get that support early, then, you know, once they're in the traditional classroom and they have, you know, difficulties fitting in, then it's easy to say, okay, you know, this student needs special needs.
Correct.
Our focus out of our podcast really, you know, look at issues that can occur during after school programs, out of school time programs. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there is a disconnect between the information that parents as well as educators share with school staff, and that's not being shared with the staff that are working with the kids during non-school hours. Mm-hmm. What information should parents and school staff provide to the out-of-school time professionals regarding the student's special needs?
Well, I think the first thing is that there should be meetings happening beforehand. But when you, the minute you know this student is going to be engaging in this program, we should already be having meetings about the child, right? With the personnel that's going to be working with them day to day, with the management. And that should be a meeting that also is held with their current teacher, and their parent. So that we can all get on one page and kind of discuss what it is we're about to do. Okay. But then also, I think that all of the IEP paperwork, there's a way that you can release that to after school, you know, personnel. And I think that that is important because all of the paperwork that tells you if this child's a biter, if they fall out and have a tantrum, what they like to eat, what their progress has been like this month, all that paperwork exists. And for me to just throw them in a program and not give them the resources, it's like, you know, setting them up to fail. Right. And so I think that you have to share those resources with them so that they can get not only acquainted with the child, but kind of know what to do. You know, as a teacher, I or as and you can relate, we take data all the time. So right. we have data points letting you know what's going on. We make notes on the data points, what they like, what they don't like. And then, of course, like having the teacher as a point of reference, having me as a point of reference is going to help you be successful and help the child be successful in the program. And I think the last thing is to just really train these professionals on how to deal with our children. I think that it's important if they're going to be interacting with them, they need to know how to handle them the same way a paraprofessional would know how to handle them in the classroom.
Right. And I agree completely with what you're saying. I mean, I was fortunate to where the school that I was working on within our district, I was also coordinating after school programs. And so mm-hmm. I think having my foot sort of in both worlds, I understood our meetings. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know what those are, you know, and this is basically right. the meeting with parents and all the other specialists who provide support to after school, support to students with special needs. The IEPs, which are the plan that has come up, our after school programs were actually part of some students' IEPs, mm-hmm. and that allowed our program to get additional support.
That's
if we
nice.
Had hearing impaired students, yeah. then there was somebody there who, you know, knew sign language.
That's nice, yeah.
When we did the, you know, homework, there were people there that helped to modify the student's homework. And it didn't make the students feel like they were, you know, separate or different than the regular students. They all did the same thing that everybody was doing. And mm-hmm. I even hate the term regular student, but,
right.
you know, that's the key. It's like we're all kind of unique. And I think the more professionals are invited to these meetings and that information is shared, the more successful the student will be.
I agree.
How important is it for, you know, SPED students and I guess students in general to take breaks and to exercise?
Woo. Okay. So I don't. Okay. So full disclosure, I'm pretty sure I was never diagnosed, but I'm always positive I have ADHD because I can't sit still. I'm that person who learns by jumping and moving and doing all this kind of stuff. So in my classroom, it's a lot going on. And so I am one of those educators who do believe for the students and for myself that, they, you know, 15 minutes is we got to cut it off. You know, like, and once again, I'm dealing with elementary age children. So we're building up that attention span. Right. But I can't ask this baby who is used to jumping and all this kind of stuff to sit for longer than 15. I mean, even 15 minutes is a stretch. Like sometimes we got to cut it at 10. And I think too many people focus on trying to get stuff done in one clump of time as opposed to over the span of the allotted time. Right. Like mm-hmm. you're trying so much to get this problem done by this time so you can get this problem done at this time because you're trying to cram in this curriculum. But it's like, OK, well, what if you cram it in and they don't even know what you're talking about tomorrow? Like you did all this stuff and then the next day you got to do it all over again because you ain't do it efficiently. So, you know, 15 minute work times is it. I mean, anything other than that, in my opinion, is not feasible. But when you do take a break, I call them brain breaks. They got to be purposeful, right? We can't just be getting up and wiggling on the floor. Okay. We got to have some purposeful breaks going on. So that could be like sometimes like if we're doing math in my class, we'll do I don't know if y'all know Jack Hartman, but we'll do a Jack. We'll put him on YouTube and we'll do the counting thing with him where he's dancing and counting and doing it. That's 3.5 minutes. They got to get up. They don't even know they're working. They don't even know they're learning. They think they're just doing jumping jacks. And then we sit back down and we do part two of whatever we're about to do for, you know, the lesson. And so I think those are important. Also, and during those times are the times to work in your breaks where you got to either take data or go to the bathroom. But those types of times, like if I know I'm working for 15 minutes, but I know when I finish working, I get to dance, that's motivation for me to do what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
If I know there's a reward, I mean, and adults are the same way, you know, like, you know what, we work out so that we can get ice cream at the end of the week. I don't know. It's the same thing. Like I want, well, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but it's like, I want to do this because I know something's in it for me at the end, because I can't see the value in this right now. Cause I'm 4 and you teaching me about ABCs does not, I don't even understand why I need to know that, but I know I want to dance and I know I want to watch Sesame Street and I know I want to run in the playground. So let me work. And I think that also engaging purposeful breaks is a way to learn. That's a reinforcer to what they've already been learning. And so I think we have to work on how we take the breaks, but they're necessary. I absolutely think they're necessary.
Right. And you know, to follow up on what you were saying, because I've always thought that if we looked at every student as in need of what we call special education services or additional resources and so mm-hmm. forth, mm-hmm. then I think it would make it easier across the board. Mm-hmm. I've had cases where we've had, you know, severely autistic kids at after school programs, and they function, you know, better during that time period than they did during the regular school day.
Right.
And I think because, you know, we did incorporate movement. We did incorporate some non-traditional. Everything wasn't just, you know, sit down and book and all of that kind of thing. Have mixed emotions sometimes about inclusion.
Once again, that's a whole nother episode. We could go there. Yeah.
I do think that, you know, there are certain equipment, special training. In fact, that's what it hurts sometimes with out of school time programs, because they don't have that special training and so forth. Yep. So they need to take that additional step to find some additional resources. And there are community agencies who will send staff that will assist. So it's just a matter of communicating, like you said earlier, making sure everybody's on the same page, and just try to do whatever we can to make students as successful as we possibly can. Do you have any final comments?
I think, first of all, I love what you guys are doing. I love the work that y'all are doing. I think it's important. So thank you for that. And honestly, I just think that in regards, not just to special education, but children in general, with every challenge, there's a solution. So it may take a little bit more work and time, and we might have to have a little extra meeting, but the reward on the other side is worth it. So to everybody's putting in the good work, keep working. It's worth it.
Well, I appreciate that. Sharia, thank you so much for being our guest on today's podcast. As always, I want to thank our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Making After School Cool podcast, with our topic focusing on ensuring SPED students receive the appropriate services during out-of-school time programs. Please join us on future episodes as we continue to explore issues relevant to the out-of-school time field.